Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Turning our attention now to our Wisconsin forest lands. You know, over half of our Wisconsin forest lands are privately owned. And that means that private woodland owners play a very important role in managing our state's forests and ecosystems. Larry Mueller here, by the way, and our guest, couple of guests for you today. One is Kirk Dahl. Kirk is on the Wisconsin Woodland Owners Association Board of Directors. He's also Wisconsin's Outstanding Tree Farmer of the Year in 2020, so he knows a whole lot. Kirk, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Larry. It's a pleasure to be here.
Also with us, Chris Widstrand. I'm sorry. Chris is a retired DNR forester and all part of this operation. He works out of the Eau Claire area. And Chris, welcome to you.
Yeah, thanks. Good to be here.
So as we talk with these two experts, I hope you'll join in. Do you have forest land on your property? Tell us about how you're managing your trees. Maybe you've got questions. It could relate to tree types. It could relate to management. Could relate to insects or other problems that you might be having. I hope you'll join in. Number to call is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Kirk, maybe we could start by talking about the Wisconsin Woodland Owners Association. What's the association about, and how do you help property owners?
Well, Larry, it's real simple. It's a nonprofit organization, just a collection of individuals who are woodland owners. And it's been around for over 40 years. It was formed in 1979, and that was pre-internet years when there really was quite a need for some sort of way to get information about the correct way to manage woodlands. And so there was actually a grant from the U.S. Forest Service to get the organization started. But the needs continue. There's still a tremendous interest in information about forest pests and disease and timber marketing and wildlife and aesthetics and so on. So we have this organization with the occasional meetings, including an annual meeting coming up in September, and we can talk more about that later.
Yeah, for sure. As you were talking about it, I was thinking about a couple of people I know who had some communication aspects connected with the association. I believe Grace White at one point, and I think Jeannie Dosh as well has done some work with the association, folks that I know. How important is forestry in Wisconsin, Chris?
Well, it's pretty important. It's one of the top industries, and we have 17 million acres of forest land in Wisconsin, about half the land area in the state, and a little more than half of that is owned by private woodland owners. So it's important, you know, with the forest products, and plus recreation on woodland is also a big factor.
Yeah. And Chris, how do people... Or maybe I should say, have you managed your own forest land? Tell us a little about that, because certainly you've been honored for your work.
Yeah, I own forest land in Vernon County, and we are in the Managed Forest Law Program, so we have a management plan that we're required to follow in order to stay in the program.
And so a plan like that entails... What?
Huh. Well, it explains the forest types that you have on your property, and it lays out a plan to best manage the forest so that it's sustainable into the future.
Got it. Louise in Dodgeville has a question for you. Let's go there. Louise, hi.
Hi. I have a question. We have 6 acres of woodland next to a DNR property, and we are doing a oak woodland savanna project. But I think I have contacted the program before and was told that 10 acres is the minimum, and I just wanted to confirm that, or if you could elaborate on that.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's 10 acres or 20 acres now. It's gone back and forth, but less than 10 acres is, you're not going to get it in the managed forest law.
Okay, so And what are the advantages of that managed forest law?
You get a significant tax break if you're going to put your land in the program. You're required to follow the management plan, and there are mandatory practices that you'll have to do. But the tax rates now, if you want to leave your land open for public access for hunting, it's $1.90 an acre. And if it's closed, it's $9.49 an acre. Those are the current rates.
Yeah, and I'll chime in here, too.
Yeah.
So my forest land in Eau Claire County that is not part of it, is not enrolled in the managed forest law. The tax rate on that is over $40 an acre, whereas the tax rate on the land that's enrolled in MFL is, as Chris said, $9.49 an acre. So there's considerable savings.
And I guess it's a way to encourage management of the properties.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right, and that's what it's designed to do, and it is doing that. There's pros and cons to the MFL, but it does promote forestry in the sense that people are financially motivated to sign into the program, and in order to get into MFL, you have to have a certified management plan, and that extends for a period of 25 years, or you can elect to do it out as far as 50 years. But it there are mandatory practices in that MFL plan, so as a forest owner looking ahead over 25 years, you will know when you are due to have a thinning or have some sort of management practice conducted on your property.
If a person owns a woodlot but doesn't really know what, you know, all right, I bought a woodlot. Maybe I bought it because I wanted to hunt deer. Maybe I bought it for other reasons. Where does a person go to really learn? I guess the Woodland Owners Association would be one place.
Well, I'll start out, Chris, but yeah, that would be one good source. We see that quite a bit, actually. People maybe inherit land and they don't really know what could be done with it or should be done with it. We find others that just have the bug to buy land. That was me back in 1982 when I bought my first land. I could hardly sit still. But I needed to know. I didn't know much about it, but I needed to know more about the managing the land and so on. And anyway, as far as how you can learn about it, one possible first step would be to check with the Wisconsin Woodland Owners. And we have a website, wisconsinwoodlands.org, all one word, wisconsinwoodlands.org. We're also on Facebook. But I would also refer people to the Department of Natural Resources. They have an excellent website with lots of resources and links. And the DNR has a program, a walkthrough program. They are offering to come out for free and walk the land with woodland owners just to show them what's there and help explain what can be done and help decide what the goals might be for managing that land. All you need is a minimum of 5 acres and set up an appointment with the DNR, and they'll come out and walk your land with you. I would say that would be an excellent way to get started.
That is a fantastic resource, I tell you. And here's Candace from Jefferson. She has 5 acres. Candace, what's on your mind?
Hello there. I did get the DNR to come out and walk the land and tell me what trees are on our 5 acres, which are connected to about two other properties that have, I think, 10 acres. They told us we have cedar, black cherry, maples, of course, the ash, elm, and hickory. But my question is, we have a lot of ash and elm trees that are coming down, and I want to replant trees, although he said they seed and they replant themselves. But we want to introduce some trees. Like my brother gave me from northern Wisconsin some red maple. Do I do that where I don't see red maple around at all? Or do I just stay consistently with the trees that we have?
Well, you can certainly plant red maple if that's what you want to do. We have the state in generally has a problem with red maple that's what comes in when we harvest oak in particular. And so red maple has become a much larger component in the forests of the state, and to the detriment of some other species. But if you want to plant red maple, you're perfectly welcome to do that. the soil may or may not be the best soil for red maple, but it grows on a wide variety of soils.
All right.
Yeah, and I would add, don't try to plant trees where they don't belong. So obviously you're not going to plant a banana tree or something in Wisconsin, but more commonly people try to plant a tree that's not suited for the soil or there's not enough sunlight in the area where that tree needs to grow, and pretty much any woodland owner can tell you about mistakes they've made in trying to get things to grow where they don't grow well.
Where they shouldn't. And, you know, a clue is if there aren't any other of a particular species in an area, it makes you wonder whether or not it's really suitable for them, or at least it may be marginally suitable, but not entirely suitable.
Yeah, right. I don't know what specifically to add about that to that, but it's amazing how it can vary. You know, a north-facing slope versus a south-facing slope.
Yeah.
Elevation changes, wind pattern, soil type, it all factors in.
Kirk Dahl, one of our guests today, Wisconsin Woodland Owners Association Board of Directors. He's on that board. Chris Woodstrand is a retired DNR forester, and they're going to be with us right up until 12:30 today as we visit with them about responsible management of private forest land and the resources that are available. We'll take a quick look at the news. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we will be back with Kirk and Chris. I'm Larry Mueller. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about responsibly managing private woodlands today on the show. Chris Woodstrand is one of our guests, retired DNR forester and part of the Wisconsin Woodland Owners Association, as is our other guest, Kirk Dahl. Kirk is on the Wisconsin Woodland Owners Association Board of Directors and was Wisconsin's outstanding tree farmer of the year in 2020. So as we talk with them, I hope you'll join in. Let us know what you think about forest management and why it's important and what questions do you have about your properties. 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Let's take some calls. We've got all of our lines full, as a matter of fact. Steve in Rome, Wisconsin, we'll go to you. Thank you for waiting. What's on your mind?
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I have two quick questions. First, I have a huge oak tree that it's very healthy, but it has some dead branches on the bottom lower end. And I'm wanting to know if I can cut those now midsummer, the fact that they're dead. I can cut them by next door to the live bark area. And if I do that, question two is, should I spray it, spray the cut to avoid any disease?
Chris, do you want to take that? Or?
Yeah, I do. If you're absolutely sure that you cannot harm any live wood, it's possible, it's safe to cut them, but I wouldn't do it.
Because, you would not?
No, I would not, because if you get into any live wood, that gives an entry point for oak wilt, because the beetles will be attracted to it. And the thing about spraying wounds, if you have an accidental wound during the oak wilt season, it's okay to spray it, but generally the spray does not help the tree heal, probably inhibits healing in the tree.
Yeah, I would just add, if there's no hurry to cut it, just wait another month or so, right? You get out of the oak wilt season by the end of July.
Yeah. And better yet, wait till fall when the tree is dormant. That's the best time to do pruning.
Yeah, I'd wait till winter. It was me. Steve, there you go. Thank you so much for calling. David in Osseo, your turn. Hi, David.
Hello, Larry. Glad to be here. Hey, I've got a burning question I've had since I've talked to my neighbors a few times about the Managed Forest Program. My wife and I have put our 40 acres into the program 10, 12 years ago. And it's we've created a nature preserve, and it's been wonderful. That's I say I have nothing but good to say about the program, but I wish we could expand it a little bit. Here's a question I got from neighbors who own land. When tax time comes, they're staring at, some of them are staring at $10,000 or more. And I say, well, get in the managed forest program. And I gave them the information, but they opted not to because there are downsides. There are disadvantages, and I've seen them all. And ultimately, their land value goes down if they get in there. And there's other options to pay for those taxes. You can rent some of your land out for corn. I think they get about $125 an acre. So there's that financial disadvantage. And they also can just go get it logged and maybe make $50,000. Or they can sell their property if they're that far behind. But I wish it was a little easier to get in the managed forest program. Any comments?
All right. David, well, thanks.
Well, as long as you're willing to do proper management, there's not an issue with getting in the program. I don't know that land is worth less if it's in the managed forest program. I guess I hadn't heard that was a big issue. And logging is allowed in the managed forest land program. It's encouraged, and the landowner does get that income.
Yeah, Chris, a comment?
Yeah, so, MFL has worked out great for me, and it depends on your objectives. The caller's certainly right. There are downsides to it, depending on your individual situation, but in my situation where I know I'm going to manage my woodlands as woodlands and try to do the proper job, do good, sustainable, sound forestry, I want a good management plan that I'm going to follow, and so I'm going to manage it properly anyway for 25 years, so I may as well be in the program. As far as reselling it, again, if your time horizon is such that you think you're going to be selling it soon, well, you may not want to encumber the land by enrolling it in MFL. I bought some land recently that was in a really cheap, it got into MFL way back, and the tax on that open land is now 72 cents an acre. And it works out great for me, even though it might be harder to sell to somebody else, but it was easier to sell to me because it was in MFL.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. David, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Actually, I think David's going to be on the program next week, Thursday, to talk about his book on going off the grid. So it was good to hear his voice. David, thanks. Mark in Scandinavia, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Thanks for taking the call. My question is, how do you pick a logger? Some of them do a great job. There's little collateral damage. They leave a lot of healthy straight trees to reseed, good genetics. And some of them leave a mess and only leave crooked, damaged trees behind. And then at one place I was going to buy, every place it had been logged, there was a infestation of garlic mustard, which had been brought in by the machinery, and they didn't clean it before they went into the new property. So I didn't buy the property as a result because I have enough trouble with invasives. How do you choose somebody?
Well, sometimes you don't have a choice because there's only certain loggers that are working in your area. That's one problem. And right now there aren't an abundance of loggers that are really out there cutting on private land. Kurt recently had a sale that I set up and helped him with, and it took us quite a while to get that even sold, to even find a logger that was willing to come in and cut it. So that's one issue with loggers. The other is there's a lot of things that you can put in a contract to help you keep control of the logger. But there's still, time. You still need to have time to manage the logger or hire a consultant forester to help you, and they can also steer you toward the loggers they want to work with.
Yeah, it the piece of land that Chris was talking about had been listed, marked for sale, and listed for 2 years before we lined up a buyer. But it's like looking for a good plumber or whatever. You know, there are some that are undesirable, but most of them are going to be fine. But Chris is exactly right. You can't necessarily get the logger in there that you want, and there just plain may not be a market for your timber that would interest a logger.
Yeah. So it's a little search process going for you, Mark, and probably something you're not going to get done next week. but good luck with it. Appreciate your call. Al in Burlington, your turn. Hi, Al.
Yeah, hi. Good afternoon. Well, I hear the word managed forest or sustainable managed forest. It seems to emphasize extraction, the removal and sale of wood fiber. And that's certainly a viable, important way to use wood products in this country. I mean, everybody uses paper every day. But there's also another pathway, example by Porcupine Mountains National Wilderness Area in Upper Michigan, the largest late successional old growth forest in the world. We have wilderness areas in Wisconsin. There's another pathway which involves not logging, not extracting, and you know, seems like there's no money in the managed forest program or others where one could just keep stuff in a late successional type of thing. Could you just talk about that difference between extraction and ongoing preservation for ecosystems that can stand less, you know, extraction type management? Thank you.
All right.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things, requirements in the managed forest law is that harvesting timber when it's mature, and there are ways to extend rotation on managed forest law. So there is a way to manage for older growth by doing extended rotation. And the other thing is, 20% of a managed forest law entry can be set aside as a non-management area. So there is a way to maintain some old growth. I mean, that's hard to do on smaller acreages, but on larger acreages, it's possible to have a, you know, an area that you don't want to manage, don't have to manage.
Yeah, and I have a couple of points. One is that when you set up your management plan for managed forest law, you specify what your goals and objectives are. And so you can say, hey, I want to squeeze every nickel out of this land and extract everything I can. That's one idea. But you can also say, I want this to be aesthetically pleasing. I want this to be a sanctuary, like a wildlife sanctuary preserve. I want to improve diversity of my timber. Those can be goals, and therefore you're not going to end up with a management plan that emphasizes extraction. The other thing I'd like to point out, Larry, is that within our Wisconsin woodland owners, we've done a survey more than once about why people own land, and timber harvesting ranks surprisingly low. Only about 15% say that extracting timber is the main reason they own the land. About 80% of people say that wildlife is a primary reason. And similar things like beauty and enjoying nature. You get into these other features about having something to hand down to future generations.
Sure.
And you know, legacy and recreation and so on. And then timber extraction's way down on the list.
Yeah, yeah. Al, thank you. Jim in Winnebago County, your turn.
Hi, folks. I wonder if anybody is aware of the Family Forest Program that is a partnership between the American Forestry Foundation and the Nature Conservancy. Actually, it's called the Family Forest Carbon Program. It seeks to develop forests that are good at sequestering carbon as a mitigation for climate change.
Chris, are you familiar with that?
Well, I've heard of it, but I really don't know too much about it.
Yeah, this carbon sequestration issue is a very interesting thing. The research is evolving, and there's a lot of conflicting information out there. Some of those programs are, in my opinion, they're sketchy as far as what the environmental benefit would be. And they're trying to encourage landowners to not harvest their timber when it's true that you leave timber on the stump, that's sequestered carbon right there. But if the timber is down and put into some more permanent use, housing or something where it's not going to just rot away and become more carbon dioxide, if you have a vigorous, young, active forest growing, that is a good sequesterer of carbon dioxide. And the other thing you just have to be careful about is there any additionality to what you're doing? So if you were going to raise timber anyway and grow timber and manage it appropriately anyway, you shouldn't be accepting money for carbon credits if you're not doing anything different. And some people would say all you're doing when corporations buy these carbon credits and try to feel better about the carbon dioxide they're putting in the air by, you know, encouraging you to grow trees, it maybe just allows them to escape doing something more directly that would diminish their production of carbon dioxide.
Hmm. Jim, thanks. Appreciate it. Bob, in Kewaunee, your turn. Hi.
Good afternoon, fellas. I was curious, does anybody have any idea how long a standing dead ash tree was good for lumber?
Hmm.
I can try to answer that.
Okay.
it probably needs to be taken down and utilized by the time it loses all of its bark or most of its bark. And the outside of the tree, the sapwood where the beetles have been feeding, is all going to get slabbed off when it goes through the mill. The inside of the tree will be all right for a while, but the longer it stands, the more staining and problems defects are going to happen with the tree.
Yeah, that makes sense. Bob, thank you. Ron in Manitowoc, your turn. Hi, Ron.
Thanks, Larry. I'm wondering what the guest's opinion would be as far as controlling deer population and taking the emphasis away from hunting and Bambi lovers into people who grow trees, grow field crops, grow gardens, or travel our roads. Thank you.
Controlling deer in forest lands.
Well, right now I'm on our county deer advisory council here in Eau Claire. And there's a lot of opinions out there about how many deer are out there and what kind of damage they're doing. We know that deer do a lot of damage to young forest. There's no doubt about that. DNR has lots of data on the browse level in forests. How do you control a population? It's difficult. We're losing hunters, for one thing. And so we have less hunters, we have less hunting pressure, and the deer populations, when we have good weather, continue to increase.
Yeah. And if you want to ever visit some of the native forest lands, you'll see they have a much more aggressive, some of the native lands where there's very aggressive deer management. Their forests look a lot different. I mean, all of the smaller plants and trees and so forth that are coming up are just are not browsed off. So there's that. Virginia in Door County, your turn. Hi, Virginia.
Hi. I have my land in managed forest, and it's about to come off, and I want to re-up it, but I can't because I can't. When I initially got into this program, the forester said when he needed to cut, he would come and mark all the trees. And that's how all the woodcutters have been operating. And so when it's time for me to cut now. And I called one man after another, and as soon as they found out that the DNR would not come and mark the trees, they will not do it. Absolutely will not do it. And then it's also in the middle of a 40-acre property, and I was walking land with the current DNR agent, and I said, well, can you at least tell me the property lines of this parcel? And he said, no, I can't. And I said, well, can you send me this picture in an email and I can take it to the courthouse? He said, no, I can't. And I went to the courthouse, and the parcel was registered, but the property lines were never given. So now I'm in a situation where I can't get it cut, and I don't know what to do. And yeah. They're talking about pulling me off the program and making me pay all the back taxes, and I don't know what to do.
Well, look into that a little more, because they've liberalized that some, and the DNR has changed the rules on that. They've made it more lenient, and if you've exercised diligence in trying to meet your mandatory practices, they'll usually work with you nowadays.
Oh, so maybe go back to them again, and you can probably substantiate your efforts in that area.
I've got one comment about that. There's a lot of consultant foresters out there, but there's a lot of work out there too. So a lot of the consultant foresters are going to pick their jobs. They're not going to do every job they're asked to do. So I would think you would still be able to find a consultant forester somewhere, but I can't tell you that because I don't know your situation.
Yeah, but it's probably worth looking a bit more for sure. Mike in Hickory Falls wonders if you have a reputable growth. He's looking for a reputable growth factor chart to use for calculating the age of trees. Most charts are not complete, missing many hardwoods. Also, using a GRF of 5, he estimated that a nearby bur oak is over 300 years old.
I don't know how to answer that one, mostly because growth rates in trees vary so much depending on the soil type, depending on the space that individual tree has to grow. So when you're talking about diameter limit of trees, diameter growth of trees, it's very variable. Height growth is much less variable, so there are charts that will give you a good idea of how old the tree is by how tall it is on a given site, but there's a lot of variation.
And the simplest thing, Chris, is, as you know, to use an increment borer, where you bore a hole into the trunk of the tree and look at the growth rings, extract a little sample of the tree.
You're going to need a big extractor for a 300-year-old tree.
Yeah, so that's true.
Will they live longer than 300 years, a bur oak?
Bur oak will live that long, yeah.
Yeah?
They will.
Well, on that note, here we are out of time. Boy, the time flew by, Kirk and Chris. Thank you so much. And I would recommend people go to the Wisconsin Woodland Owners Association website, type that into your search engine, and it's going to pop up. And we have a link on our page as well, the Larry Mueller Show, ideas@wpr.org/Larry. Thanks to Kirk and to Chris. And thank you for listening in. Tomorrow we'll take a look at a list of summer books fit to read by the lake, maybe with a refreshing drink. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.